Hey, this is Daniel. Thanks for listening to DIY Money. If you haven't already, be sure to give us a 5-star review on iTunes so your friends know that they can learn from the show. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to another edition of DIY Money.
DIY Money.
What's shaking, Daniel?
I feel like you and I are getting paired together a lot lately.
That's because the popular demand.
Logan,
you read the poll.
Logan snubbed me.
I put it out to the people. Who do you prefer to hear?
You didn't do that.
They did. It's by popular whatever request. Have you listened to the Will Levis episode?
Wasn't I here when we cut it? Maybe.
You weren't on it. It was Logan and I that did the episode. I don't know if you were here.
I don't know either.
So the answer is no, you did not listen to it.
I did not listen to
it. Well, you should
when
go
did
back
it drop?
And listen to it. It dropped the other day. Will gave us a little link love on the social, which was nice. But it was such a fantastic. I like the questions that, and I know we're not talking about that today. Today we're talking about straight up like stocks and index funds and stuff, which is fine. But I really like the questions that are psychology driven, or they're more like life. Maybe we should have a life show. DIY life. Do-it-yourself life. What are you doing on your phone? I'm trying to talk to you, and you're just like in-depth on your cell phone. If you were watching us on YouTube right now, you'd be like, man, Daniel's being rude.
What is wrong with you?
I'm rude.
What are you doing?
Are you talking to the listeners or me?
I'm talking to you.
Okay.
What are you doing on your phone?
Usually you're talking to a listener.
See, and I've asked 3 times and he won't answer me. I'm looking at the camera too.
I'm just like scrolling.
That's just a straight shooter with upper management written all over him.
Okay. Anyways, so you're going to tell me. Anyways, you didn't listen to the episode and told me what's going on in your life. This podcast sponsored by Joule Financial, J-O-U-L-E Financial. Visit us on the web. If you've got a complex problem, many of you are doing that. We love it. It's great to connect with you, and if we can help you, we'd love to do so. If not, that's okay, too. We are in need. This is a special note from Allie, who now screens all of our questions. She wants some juniors. So if you've got a youngin' out there that's got a curious mind, or you just want to find a way to pawn off $25 in their account, which is what I did for my son as he was trying to raise money for Christmas, write him a question and have him read it.
We had a few good juniors. Way back.
We went through a nice long string of juniors.
There were some good ones.
Yeah.
No pressure.
But they also get, well, now they'll definitely get bumped to the top. So if you got a young, curious mind out there, just record the question. Send it to podcast@diymoney.org. That's podcast@diymoney.org. And if we use it on the show, we'll send you a $25 Amazon gift card. All right. We've got a good question today from James in Maryland. What do you got?
DIY!
Hey guys, it's James from Maryland. Love the show. I've been listening a year and a half now, and I've started binging previous episodes. I was listening to an episode from December 6, 2020, some dark times there, about index funds, and it sparked a big question for me. When I was 18, I received a life insurance check, which I immediately put in the stock market with an investment advisor at Merrill Lynch. I'm 26 now, and has grown to about $250,000. It was diversified, but I own single stocks. I was recently reading The Simple Path to Wealth, where J.L. Collins is a huge proponent of simple index funds. My time horizon, should I consider moving all this money into Vanguard and into VTSAX to take advantage of simple indexing? Would that be too large of a taxable event? Should I instead consider putting all of my future investments into index funds and not my current investments? A little background, my wife and I have a 6-month emergency fund, own one rental property, have approximately $100,000 divided between our IRAs and 401ks, and we have fully funded them for the last 2 years. Really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay, James, great question. Thanks for the shout out of binging the episodes, especially going back to 2020, because I do recall, talking about the opportunities that were presenting themselves at that time when Daniel and I had to make our own studio because we couldn't go into the studio
that
at that time.
That's where we really, the studio started here.
Yeah, studio started here, and we never went back into the radio studio. So it sounds like, and I'm guessing that, let's see, you got a check, life insurance check or something like that is what he said. And it was,
you were 18,
18, so that was 8 years ago. So this was, obviously you were listening to the episodes from 2020, probably around the time we were talking about index funds, because many stocks never did come back to highs, and now the S&P is at highs, the NASDAQ is at highs, and so forth. I'm guessing that was probably the episode you were talking about or referring to. Now, there's a couple things in play here. So it's very difficult, in my opinion, for you to just sort of go back to your situation and after these years, which there are probably some substantial gains, all of a sudden make a dramatic shift, which then unlocks a tremendous amount of capital gains. So I think you have to do some tax planning is what I'm saying here. I don't think it's unnecessary to shift towards index or passive investing going forward. I'm guessing you're already doing that in your retirement plans. I'm guessing that, and I would agree that future subsequent investments should be index-based, you know, passive, you know, et cetera. But if you've got some individual stocks that were bought by an advisor and you have massive gains, obviously you're going to be subject to 20%, I mean, depending on your income bracket, 20% federal income tax on the capital gain. If you were to do that across the board, that's probably a pretty hefty hit. So I'm not sure just hitting the button and doing that is wise. There's a couple of strategies you could look at. First and foremost, obviously, is looking at each individual name and seeing if by chance there are any dogs in there, right? So is there anything in there that didn't pan out? Maybe there's some bonds in there even. I doubt it. If you started at 18, you probably just went in all stocks. But if there's anything in there that might have a loss, you could sell that and you could take that loss and you could sell some other positions that have gains and kind of wash that out. So you're, you know, reducing your exposure to some of the names that have done well, and while at the same time taking your loss and effectively not paying any tax on that. That's one strategy. But if you have a list of, you know, great companies and they're all up, which over the last, you know, 6 years or actually 8 years, that might very well be the case. Now that strategy is out the window. Second thing to do is if you and your wife are charitably minded. Now, this is what my wife and I do a lot. So if you are charitably minded, let's say that every 2 weeks you get a paycheck and you tithe, or, you know, every quarter you get a bonus and you tithe. And again, this is if you're charitably minded, you could set up a donor advised fund. And we've done episodes on this, so I'm not going to go too far into the weeds here, but you could set up a donor advised fund. And instead of giving out of your check every 2 weeks or every month or every year, you could gift stock to your donor advised fund, sell that stock in the donor advised fund, and then send that money to your 501c3. So effectively, even if it's, you know, $500-$600 every couple of weeks, you are effectively getting the money to the 501c3. That's clearly the objective. You are potentially getting a deduction on that if you itemize. Again, another episode for another day. But at minimum, every time you move that $500 in stock out, instead of writing the check to your church or to your nonprofit, you put that money back into the account and buy an index fund with it. So you're slowly over time diversifying away from the individual positions, not paying tax on it, and diversifying into more index positions. My wife and I do this with long-term capital gains, both on individual stocks as well as ETFs, and it works very well. Sometimes I think I look at positions that have done really, really well, and I'm like, gosh, I just kind of can't give this fast enough because I would rather just hit the button and sell it all, but I don't want to. Some of it has short-term gains, so I don't want to pay the tax on it. So that's another strategy. Finally, the third strategy would just be coming back to your overall ordinary income and sort of what levels are you at with capital gains tax, and potentially, again, meeting with a tax advisor and sort of strategizing a little bit as far as, okay, when and how should we start selling these things down? What is our tax bracket? What exactly are we going to pay in tax? And sort of laying out a longer term strategy. There's other strategies as well. I'm going to say them and I'm going to leave them here. I'm going to let you research them. there's, if you had, let's say your advisor 8 years ago bought NVIDIA, and you're up a gazillion percent in it, and it's like the biggest position you have, and you have $100,000 in gain in that one stock, you could explore things like writing covered calls and using options to protect your position and slowly start to diversify your stock as well. I'm just going to say that and then let you research that or talk to your advisor about that. If you're still with your Merrill Lynch guy, any capable advisor can help you with that. Again, that's a covered call strategy or utilizing options to protect yourself. There's also, and this is the last one, there's also, and I would not advise this one, but there's also unique structured products that some of these bigger institutions have that if you had a massive single stock risk, I don't think this is your case, but let's say a family that has held onto a position for, you know, multiple generations, they can actually transition that stock over into a structured product. The bank or the investment bank will take that on as risk, and they will replace it with a diversified basket of equivalent type positions and give them diversification and not trigger a tax event. That is a structured product. That's a whole nother world. We've never done an episode on that. But if you're sitting out there, if you're an audience member and you're like, yeah, I've had, you know, Walmart since I was two and I've got $1 million in gain in it and I don't know what to do with it, there are unique strategies out there for that. So that's all I could share with them. I don't know where you're going
to
fill in the blanks here, but you know what?
Not
you
a lot
paid
of blanks
me no mind
in
the beginning, so that's go right. ahead, Daniel.
I could just ignore you now and we could wrap up.
Well, I could be wrong, but I believe diversity is an old, old wooden ship that was used during the Civil War era.
No, it goes back to our old adage of know what you own and why you own it. So regardless of the fact that you have an advisor, it's still your job to understand what's in your investment accounts and why you own it. So to discuss and collaborate with your advisor, understand that and understand how it fits into your overall financial plan. If you're looking to move or utilize more index funds versus stocks, then what you're probably doing and the reason why you're wanting to own index funds is to reduce your single stock volatility, because typically individual companies will be more volatile than a basket of companies. However, with that decreased volatility means you might mitigate some upside potential return whilst also mitigating some of the downside risk. That's what happens when you mitigate that volatility. So it'd be important to talk to your advisor about what is in your account, why they chose those stocks, why they own it, and what their view of is on that now. So by sort of trying to avoid the tax consequences of taking that money out, you could risk that those stocks, you know, at some point in the future go down and you give up some of those gains, barring any type of hedging strategy that Quint talked about. So kind of keeping that in mind and really discussing with them. If you're in a relationship with your advisor and you're not really feeling free to discuss that, then it might be time to look for another advisor or financial planner, et cetera, somebody like Jewel or somebody local to you. So keep that in mind. But that's what we do. And when we see clients, at least in our office, that come in with sort of large positions, or if they're part of our portfolio and they have these positions that have gone up over time, it's something then that, you know, we collaborate with them in managing around and understanding how that works, but also understanding when it's time to bite the bullet and pay the tax. Taxes are a result of gains, and at some point, the gains that you have in your investment are best utilized or put somewhere else in your plan. That could be other assets that you want to purchase in life, things like real estate or large purchases like autos, things like that. Just other goals in your life, or you just might want to reduce that future risk. So there is a time where it just makes sense, even though you're going to pay potentially 15 or 20% capital gains tax, depending on where you're landing income-wise. At some point, it just makes sense to pay the tax, move on, and appreciate the gains that you have booked there.
Oh, how far we've come to talk about taxes on gains.
Well, when markets are at highs, we talk about taxes on gains.
It's fascinating, though. I mean, most of the time over the years, we've had conversations about staying invested, mm-hmm. paying off debt, being disciplined, and now we're talking about taxable gains.
Hallelujah! 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 Hallelujah!
All right, great question, James. Hopefully you found some value in there. I know there you could go back and listen. There's a lot of nuggets regarding many strategies that you could explore. And again, hopefully something fits with what you're facing. All right, all James did was send us an audio question to podcast@diymoney.org. Again, that's podcast@diymoney.org. And because we used it on the show, we'll send him a $25 Amazon gift card. All right, friends, remember the secret to wealth is pretty simple. Live on less than you make. Invest the rest. Do so for a very long time. Make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the show. If you want your question aired on the show, be sure to send that to us and you'll get $25 Amazon gift card.
This show is for entertainment and educational purposes only and is not intended as personal financial advice. Before making any financial decision, please do your homework and consult a financial advisor as needed.